Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. This is Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations, a podcast to continue that conversation. Because every week on Clubhouse, Tuesdays at 12:55 Eastern, come on and join us, we have these incredible discussions with brilliant people who sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
We always walk away from those Clubhouse talks with so many thoughts, so many conversations we didn't have the time to have. So we decided to share those and reach even more of our friends and collaborators by making this podcast. And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesday. First and foremost, welcome back, Joe. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. I heard Natalie was amazing.
Yeah, we
went rogue.
I would have hoped for nothing else.
It definitely was like very interesting to see like the differences in energy between you and Natalie. It's like something I think about frequently with like even my podcast with Andrew. It's like such a different energy than with you and I. And it was so true of Natalie and I as well, which was fun.
What's like one word to summarize said energy?
I want to know what Lucy would say. Ridiculous. It was, I guess that's the word. Okay, so let's get to Clubhouse this week. We talked about a couple of things. A couple of really good things this week. Scarlett Johansson in the news. If you haven't seen, she's suing Disney over the release of Black Widow. They simultaneously released in theaters and streaming. And that she's suing them, saying it was a violation of her contract because she's not being compensated for any of the revenue from Disney Plus subscriptions, which stands to set a really interesting precedent for negotiating contracts in the future. It's kind of like this moment 10 years ago when streaming platforms came out, or 15, whatever it's been. There was a moment where like we were like, oh shit, how are the unions and agents going to structure these now? It feels like it's really coming to a head. So that was really interesting. And then there was also a French initiative to stimulate economic growth over the last couple of months that is giving 300 euros to 18-year-olds to spend on culture, which is like rad. And that could include music, books, museums, or performance. So we got to talking about that too. So shake up the bingo tree. That's not a real thing. I made it up. Where do you want to start, Joe?
I was just going to ask, what is shaking up the bingo tree? Is this another Midwesternism?
No.
That I was just lost on? Because I like it.
I didn't know what the thing is.
Bingo basket?
Yeah. Is that what it's called?
I don't know. It sounds good.
Yeah. If you can't see me, but I was hand gesturing the wheel, you know, the wheel
we're
thing.
We're cranking
with
the bingo
balls.
Basket here.
Yeah, exactly.
We're pulling out. Oh, this little ball says ScarJo. Oh. What do you think it says about me that I just like have been looking for her contract? Like, I was like, is this published on the internet anywhere?
Oh, totally.
Is the clause out there that is in conflict? I can't find it anywhere.
Oh, and no, like, you would never be able to find that.
I definitely gave it a try. And I was like, maybe they would have released this. I mean, like, look, it's so clear and obvious. Who knows how this got leaked to the internet? Definitely her agent.
It could happen, right? I mean, we've been talking all week, last week while you were gone, actually, about there's a YouTube star who released both RuPaul World of Wonder contracts or got them. I don't know where from. He did not release them, but he made two videos on it that Jermaine and I have been obsessed with watching through because the World of Wonder contracts are so crazy. So, I mean, here's to hoping this one gets released. But
yeah, I'd love to see. I'd love, especially if it's like super, super clear. Because you know how like you hear the conjecture and the back and forth and like the public statements that each of these entities, Scarlett Johansson and her representation, Disney and their representation, that they're making. And it's all like public theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then like behind the scenes, is it actually just like straight up in the contract that like this needs to be released to theaters for XYZ reasons? This does not include releasing just like if it's just like so black and white, but you know, in the public theater, you know, Disney's playing it up as if she's being ridiculous or whatever it might be and just trying to like swing public sentiment against her and her representation.
Yeah, because I mean, I would actually just bring it back to something we started to talk about in Clubhouse today, which is that like really probably at the end of the day, the really important thing in this is that she's suing them because she's not being compensated for any of the revenue from Disney Plus subscriptions, which really goes back to that decade 15 years ago, right? When new media contracts were negotiated and everybody was like, oh, what the fuck do we do with this new distribution system? And they screwed the pooch. And there are forms of revenue that come from a streaming premiere of a movie that are not in SAG agreements at all. on the back end.
Yeah. And is that on SAG? It's just like they haven't kept up with the times.
Yes, of course.
These streaming platforms, I guess like a lot of them were released or accelerated across the pandemic, but like they've been coming for a while.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a problem. Netflix has existed for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I guess no one anticipated, you know, when this contract was written and signed, it probably, you know, was pre-pandemic. There was probably no anticipation for the fact that movies would be premiering in a streaming capacity. Mm-mm. Like everyone would have been, you know, all the studios and whatnot would have been fighting tooth and nail against that because their revenue was built into this system of it gets released into theaters and then eventually it goes into, you know, on demand and or home box office and or DVD sales and things like that. Like it was a set in stone sort of thing. So I can totally see like, yeah, her old contract, things not getting caught or changed or updated. And now they're just like fighting it out.
Yeah. And to your point, it's not her and it's not her. It's a SAG. It's totally on SAG to have negotiated this as that change was coming. You know what I mean? Or put in place some kind of retroactive situation so they could have buy time because this is going to be complicated to figure out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so wild how the technology and how our use of the technology, like I resisted Disney Plus, for example, for a while because I was like, I don't need another streaming thing and I don't really care. And then I ended up getting it. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, oh, I'm never not going to own this. I'm never not going to subscribe to this. Mm-hmm. Like there's such a backlog of content. There's so many great new things coming out on it. Like, of course, I'm going to continue to have this. But I actually don't think I'm going to go see. I wouldn't have gone to see many movies outside of like probably a handful of the Marvel ones or something like that in the theaters.
Oh,
I just wouldn't have. Like, but I will be watching those because I now have Disney Plus. And so that little chunk of revenue that like comes from me and my subscription, like is kind of like invented out of thin air, right? I wouldn't have gone to the theater. This small percentage of my ticket would not have made it to Scarlett Johansson's pocket, but it is now making it into Disney's pocket.
Because there's a new way to experience this, which is like the exact same thing as what we're doing, right? It's like putting a live theatrical experience on the internet does not drive ticket sales away from an in-person, or if it does, it's a very small sliver. It just adds audiences. And that's, like you were just saying, is exactly what's happening here. You're adding audiences, which makes it doubly important for SAG to have created contracts that like take a percentage. And for all of you who were not in the clubhouse room with us today, I pulled up the SAG-AFTRA 2019 commercial rate sheet. It's 27 pages of tables, rate tables. It is like so granular and so, you know, drilled down. And we just like don't have that for new media. And to your point that you made a second ago, we've been fucking at this for 10 or 15 years now. Like there's no excuse for them to not have this shit figured out.
I wonder too, I don't know enough about how Spotify's like revenue sharing model works with artists.
Woof.
And it's like not good for artists, but at least it's like for the medium that is a streaming medium.
Yeah.
Like they have a public-facing counter of song counts, and they pay out some fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a penny for every one of those counts. And then that goes off to the artist. And like the model is out there. Like it isn't that crazy to think that like, oh yeah, no, we are tracking everything on this, you know, this app. We know who's subscribing. We know what they subscribed to and watched first.
Right.
We know how quickly they unsubscribed. We know what they watched, what they watch second, what they watch third. And like, could it be such that, yeah, there's little bits and points or just like fixed values, fixed rates, fixed cents, fractions of cents that come from every single movie that I have on a platform. You know, I'm Scarlett Johansson in this instance now.
Yeah, of course you are. Well, that goes back to what you were saying earlier today about your friend Ramiz and his startup, right? Is like the actual issue in that is not that the technology doesn't exist. It's that Spotify is shit for artists, right? One platform who owns their, you can be transparent all you want, but like, it's like terrible. And what actually has to happen is not only does the platform have to have that analytics breakdown, but there has to be a third party, i.e. the union, who's using a third party technology, i.e. Ramiz's startup.
Antenna.tv. Go check it out if you're interested.
Nervous. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it because I can't remember where he is in his life.
It's public.
Okay, great.
He's got clients.
Okay, good. Antenna.tv to like measure across all the platforms, which is what enables SAG to set higher rates in, right, that are in the favor of the actor, not the individual platform.
Can I take us on an aside really quickly? Mm-hmm. And I can't promise it'll be quick, so here we go.
Okay.
I was thinking about Spotify and how Spotify in the way that it pays out. So it's per stream. Yep. And a stream, I think, is calculated after like a handful of seconds. Like, I don't know, maybe you have to get 30 seconds into a stream for it to count as mm-hmm. a stream. Mm-hmm. And so it's changed the way that artists now create and publish music. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Drake is a big proponent of this, let's call it. I don't know, he does it where he just like releases these like 86 song albums that people just kind of yeah. blow through because he gets a little bit of a cent yeah. on every single one of those streams. Doesn't matter how long the song is, yeah. as long as they play it for some percentage of the length of that song.
Right.
And so it like changed the way that he, this artist, is creating music.
The game of scale in the content creation as well, which was never a thing in music.
Yeah, exactly. And like all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's a value to creating these short songs. You know, the last time that was the case was like back when you had to have a radio edit less than 3 minutes, yeah. like just, or the size of the LP could only support X amount of mm-hmm. time because it was just like limited by its physical size. Mm-hmm. And I wonder now what, like, in the way that people consume on streaming apps changes the type of content that's going to be created for it, and what will a revenue model and or a sort of profit sharing model, how will that impact the way that an agent is going to negotiate a contract or a studio is going to choose to create content, because all of a sudden they're having to pay out X, Y, and Z based on, you know, A, B, and C. I have no idea which direction that goes. I don't even have like a theory to throw out. That's why I'm using X, Y's, and Z's. But like, I love the idea that technology plus the revenue model that supports it plus all the competing actors and actors less in the stage actor sense and more in just like people yeah. incorporated into this mix.
Right.
Like all of those elements together coming to create a new type of content mm-hmm. that is slightly different, but like you can see the roots of it in what has come before it. And I'm just like, I like that. I like that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if for anyone who is going to, like me, go away thinking about that, the thing that's the interesting, really cool and interesting about this example of Scarlett Johansson and, you know, a Marvel movie being simultaneously released on a streaming platform and in the movies is that, unlike Spotify, it's not just how much of the song you get through. It's also how many new subscribers you drove, which was Lucy's question today, right, in Clubhouse. And like, because if someone just signs up for 1 month to watch the Black Widow movie, right, like that's a measurement. And so I would be really interested in that, like, question that you're asking, like, how does that impact content? You know, because like, it's very clear and obvious, I think, like, if the economies of scale in the Spotify example, and that's probably true of filming platforms, if people were getting paid out the same way Spotify pays them out. But like, what is directly equated to the driving new subscribers, which like historically is just kind of associated with a hot property, right? It's, you know, anything from, I don't know, back when Peaky Blinders finally got released in the United States to a Marvel movie, which is like outside of the control of a lot of stuff, you know, because that tends to be the domain of big budget things.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting too, like how it'll impact the way that things get marketed, because mm-hmm. it won't be drive ticket sales, it'll be drive subscriptions.
Mm-hmm. Like this, I can't miss this.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I need to subscribe to this right now. And like, mm-hmm. will the selling point be like, this is actually cheaper than going to a movie in person. Mm-hmm. And you get this whole wealth of content. And here's a chain of emails to keep you subscribed. And just like, it's going to be a different world. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, what a crazy fun world.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really interested to see how this ends up playing out. Yeah.
I'm calling it, as I did earlier, and we could use this to transition into our next topic, which is manga is going to be the future content driver of Hollywood's blockbuster pictures, in the same way that comic books have dominated the past like 25 years at this point.
Can you please describe what manga is?
Yeah, so it's comics or graphic novels that are usually in like a serialized fashion, and it's originated in Japan. And so like this art form, this style of storytelling, you know, comic forward, graphic novel based. And there are these like beautiful serialized, like long running stories that people get obsessed with, that, mm-hmm. that you sort of like ingratiate yourself in this world through the pages of these graphic novels. And it's driven animated series and movies. And it's just such a huge wealth of content, in the way that like the American comic book world has sort of like become the huge revenue driver for Hollywood blockbuster movies, that I could see it happening in a similar way, just because there's this huge wealth and backlog of content, both content that is like interesting and artful, and because it is so like widely innovated in, especially within Japan, that there's just like so much good stuff there. It's just like a treasure trove. And then in addition to that, there is like a huge, huge, huge fan base, both in Japan and then globally, for all of these properties, you know, like Naruto and Dragon Ball Z and all these ones that are a little bit more familiar to American audiences, mm-hmm. but then like an infinite number if you really want to go and dig into it.
Mm. I thought one thing that we didn't get to talk about today with this that I thought was really interesting was Emily, our colleague, was mentioning how she had read a couple articles about this that weren't the ones that Lucy pulled, and that they were like really totally veered a different direction, which was to not focus on France is giving 18-year-olds $300 to spend on arts and cultures. They
were, we buried the lead on this one.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. That, ta-da, I worked it in.
Nailed it.
But that it was veered towards teenagers got $300 and they're spending it on manga.
What's manga?
Well, can I not say? and I just, what I was thinking when I was listening to you all talk about this on Clubhouse, that like the media has so much power to like override our brains from thinking for themselves, because that kind of lens on the article immediately puts you in the like Emily was saying, I was just thinking about like, oh, these people are spending, like they got money to spend on manga and like, and that's, and even when they were supposed to spend it on theater and opera and blah, blah, blah. And while like, I would much prefer them to spend it on theater and opera and dance, because that's the thing I care about. Like, as someone said it during Clubhouse, the categorization or the prioritization of art, like manga is super art, right? Like, and it employs a huge universe of artists across, I'm sure, writers and visual artists and publishers and all of that stuff. And then, as you just said, extends so far out. And I got to thinking about like how the media is and how our monkey brains are just like consume, download opinion. Yes, I told you, without, and then we never think through like, no, it's art just like everything else.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because
it's not like, my art.
Yeah. Like, I feel like you could very much enjoy like a manga series.
Totally.
And like, whether
who knows,
reading it in like its traditional form or you're watching an animated version of it. Like, there's just like these beautiful stories being told through this medium because it is so popular as a mm-hmm. medium. Like, artists flock to it. It mm-hmm. is a way to tell stories, and artists want to tell their stories. And yeah, I think there's amazing things out there. I'm going to try and find something that I think you'll like and I'll send it to you.
Cool. I've never gotten to graphic novels or comic books. I tried with Walking Dead, actually, once the show came on, because I think I didn't know what graphic novels were before Walking Dead. And they're just like not my speed, but that's because I like 1,000-page dense word books.
I think you could get there. I think like it's it's a different approach, and it's, yeah, it's about like the longevity of the story, because it just keeps going, or at least that's what I like about it.
Yeah,
it's almost like a soap opera in graphic novel
form.
That's
funny.
A little less soap opera-y.
Yeah.
But I love, or at least that got me thinking what you were just saying about like the sort of immediate dismissal of manga as a category, because like, yeah, it was in a box for you, and like you didn't have a personal experience with it, and it made it really easy to be like, why are these kids spending on manga? That's stupid. It's supposed to be on the theater.
Wait, for the record, I never said that.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking about when I was listening to you all talk about it.
Fair enough. But that, it brings me back to something I was saying on the Clubhouse conversation about like the centralized control over what this money, this 300 euros, could be spent on by these French 18-year-olds, mm-hmm. and how there are some restrictions that it has to be in these sort of general arts entertainment categories, but that it wasn't too restrictive such that it was only the theater, it was only this or only that, mm-hmm. and like sort of the limitations on centralized planning, because mm-hmm. it then comes from, if Jess is the arts minister of France and is like, no, like I think the theater is super valuable, super important, comes from like such a genuine place of like, this is culture, this is our culture, this is something that like kids should be doing or playing around with or being interested. And you would like, I'm not just turning you into a monster, sorry.
That's fine. That's what I'm here for.
And then all of a sudden you're saying you can only use this money on, you know, my version of the arts. And then you're like, blocking off this whole other world that has a ton of value, that could be the future in some ways. You know, Hollywood needs all these stories to be told.
Yeah.
And so like not having too much centralized planning or too much centralized restriction allows for the individuals to find all those nooks and crannies or invest in what they're interested in and continue to drive the culture forward through a lens that maybe that central planner didn't see or didn't think about or didn't know that they even wanted. But it's happening because of like, you know, I guess, marketplaces and, you know, creativity and just sort of openness. And it reminded me so much of the thing that we say about our own technology, where it's like, we want to like create tools for people to then go break mm-hmm. and mess around with and use to create things that we could never in our wildest dreams imagine. And this feels in that same world where it's like, give this money to these teens and let them go run around and be crazy with it, you know, mm-hmm. within certain parameters, I guess. Culture,
yeah. Although it's, to be fair, just to play devil's advocate for a second, something you just said made me think, like someone still made the decision for what is linked in this app that they have to use to spend. And it reminded me immediately, the way you were just describing all that, of a conversation I had with a street artist in Melbourne a few years ago. I was a street artist at Blender Studios, which is a really cool artist collective spot down in the docks. And he did a street art tour, and he was sort of bringing to our attention that the city had started commissioning some of the walls, which was like not a thing, right? Like in Melbourne, like it's kind of like, put your shit up, know it's going to be covered up by the next day by someone else. And you got to be real fucking good for your shit to stay on a wall, you know, and not just like be, it's what you were just talking about. The city started commissioning walls. And while like the commissioned walls were these beautiful works of art, you know, he was like, who gave that person, this town, basically, like you said, arts minister, but it's like the town council person, the qualification to decide which of these street artists makes good enough art to be commissioned, and mm-hmm. what is all of that? And like a piece of that conversation just popped into my head that like ultimately, and this is something my friend Jason says, like, don't ever say you're doing something good for everyone, because like if you follow the line down, you can't claim that every ripple effect is going to be good from the things that you do. And this feels like one of those things.
Those potential negative externalities that your mm-hmm. best intentions.
Like what got left out of that app, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking during that conversation about how technology could actually like help you to localize the spending of that money. So like instead of having it be around the type of thing that you're spending on, and therefore having like, I don't know, a list of businesses that are registered somewhere, however the French government is doing this, mm-hmm. Instead just have it be geofenced. And it's like, oh, here's $300, spend it on whatever you want. Just make sure it's inside within your local locality, your township, your square 2 miles or whatever it is. They'll have some areas that they need to map out, obviously, but like just a different lens on the same idea. So it's not putting the money behind culture as a concept, but it's putting the money instead behind like local investment, which I think is valuable, differently valuable, equally valuable.
Yeah, because Lucy,
I think there is a geolocation aspect to the app, but again, it is still limited within culture. But I think there's an element of like focusing on businesses that are physically near you.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just like I had not read this news, and just, I don't know, for better, worse, all the things in between. It makes me so happy. It makes me happy that like a government is recognizing the strife that the arts and culture sector is experiencing right now and is not going away anytime soon. It makes me happy that like a subsection of young people are going to get an investment in becoming patrons of the arts, whether that's manga or, you know, theater or anything in between. I just feel like it's such an intentional, like it's an intentional gesture in a way that I feel like we don't usually see from governments, for sure.
I know. Can I take us the direction of like, what would it take to do this in the States?
Yeah.
Because a big component of our conversation on Clubhouse was like, this would never happen in the United States. There's just so many reasons why it wouldn't happen here, you know, whether it be like fiscally conservative jackasses to just like the limitations on, do we have a public database that we could route into an app? Like, do we have the infrastructure set up to even support this?
And like, to Richard Feldman's point, who was with us today in Clubhouse, we're 50 times larger than France. So like, do we have too many people to do this? Also,
give all those kids $300.
You get $300 and you get $300.
It reminds me a little bit of I can't remember who the entrepreneurial like guy is, but he was some very, very wealthy guy, and he was basically like bribing high school students to start their companies instead of going to college. Mm-hmm. He was like, college is a broken system, you're just a cog in a wheel, it's continuing the sort of indoctrination and just like mm-hmm. whatever. That was his, I can't paraphrase his whole thing because I don't really know it, but what he wanted to do was basically like give people $100,000 and say, go start a business. Like, skip college.
Oh my God.
As long as you don't go to college, you have this $100,000.
Holy shit.
And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, I like that. Like, that works for some people. You know, someone out there is going to make use of that money. And mm-hmm. it feels a little, you know, paternalistic for him to be like, you're not allowed to go to college. Yeah. And maybe I'm extrapolating a bit beyond what he actually said or what the terms of this agreement were with these people. But I just like love the idea that it's like, here's another option. And like, what if the, yeah, what if that was built into our system? That's like, hey, there's multiple different ways to approach, you know, becoming successful, to creating things, to making cool stuff.
I tell you what I would have done. I would have taken that 100 grand, frittered it away in Europe, and then come back and gone to college.
Nailed it.
And then you started a business anyway. I know. So you didn't need it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Didn't even need that rich guy's
money. We
could
really use that right now, honestly.
I can't remember who this guy's name is. It doesn't really matter, but I just like love the idea of it, even though it sort of like cuts against my grain of... Oh, these rich people just dictating how the world works.
Ay, ay, ay.
But I do enjoy when money gets disseminated with few strings attached mm-hmm. to people to go crazy with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the key. That's the key to our broken capitalist system, is just give more money to people who will maybe do interesting things with it. Like, there yeah. doesn't even have to be a promise, right? Because like, too many hoops to jump through or applications to fill out. You know, both it allows for potential abuse, but it opens up the potential for, you know, someone who maybe wouldn't have filled out that app or even known about the thing to get some money and do some crazy things with it.
I can't wait for our conversation that's coming up soon on the podcast with Justin Masterson, our friend from the UK, who has taken the helm of this incredible work live space for artists that like sort of encapsulates all the things you're talking about. I feel like this is going to be the conversation of a century for you.
I cannot wait. And so everyone, if you're listening to this podcast and you are not yet subscribed, make sure you subscribe, because we're going to be talking with Justin Masterson about the brilliance of the UK and
giving
their public arts programs
a way to just do whatever you feel like doing with it.
That's so cool. I'm really excited. So yeah, hit that subscribe button, get us into your feeds, check out that episode when it's coming. And we hope you enjoyed this episode too. And let us know what you think of it. You know, these conversations only keep going around and around if you keep that chain going. So join the conversation with us on Twitter. You can tweet at us at @BWYUnlocked. Use that hashtag TechTheaterCH and share your thoughts.
And then of course, join our next conversation Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern on Clubhouse. Raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
And we love sharing the latest in tech and theater with you all, but there are so many great pieces and topics that we miss out on, and we would love for you to share the news with us as well. So if you've read something interesting or seen something really cool, we'd love to hear from you. Bring your story to Clubhouse next week, 12:55 Eastern on the Clubhouse app, and we'll bring you up on stage to talk about it.
Every week, I close with the same thing, y'all. Every single topic we've talked about has been inspired by the articles we read and the people on our stage. So please come join us. Join in the conversation on Twitter at #TechTheaterCH and share the news with us, and we'll see you next week.
And if you have manga recommendations for Jess, send them over.
Yep.
@BWYUnlocked. Bye, everyone.
Bye.